What do you think? The red or the blue?
I really like the blue. It sets off your eyes really nicely.
Yeah, I don't know. The red one just feels a bit more exciting. Ugh, can't decide.
Well, they are both lovely helicopters.
Nicer problems to have. It's a EuroMillions Mega Week. On Tuesday, there's 5 guaranteed UK millionaires, and on Friday, 25 millionaires in the European Millionaire Maker. Rules and procedures apply. Available at nationallottery.co.uk. Players must be 16 or over.
Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Damas y Caballeros.
And welcome back to another edition of Leaving Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas. Now, it's a special edition because it's on Thursday. I mean, we normally do it on Wednesday, but for some reason, we couldn't schedule the show. So me and Felipe said, well, let's just push it to Thursday. And so here we are, man. Quite a few things to talk about. Felipe, how you been? Anyways, brother, how you doing?
Good, David. Thank you. Hello to everybody listening in. Here we are, another episode of Leaving in the Ring.
Another episode in the books here. Well, you know, as we know it, Halloween is right around the corner. It's going to be next week. So a lot of folks already are wearing their costumes. So somebody out there is posing as Richard Schaefer. Did you see that? Somebody's wearing the Richard Schaefer costume. He's back in the mix, in the promoting mix, and he had a chance to talk to Steve Kim. So Steve Kim posted up an article on UCN Live, and I don't know, some interesting things that he said, some things that he did say that kind of stood out, which I was scratching my head in terms of him saying that he possibly sees the relationship with Golden Boy, you know, possibly him and Oscar De La Hoya sitting down across from each other and, you know, mending things up. But, you know, if I remember correctly, Felipe, I think Steve pointed this out in his article as well, is he was one of the key players of ruining the relationship of Golden Boy with HBO. And then they set off to Sunset with Showtime. I'm kind of curious of how he's going to, because he's talking about doing business, you know, outside of the PBC world and kind of creating his own little kind of, you know, stable of fighters, which he says he's already got lined up. He's looking to sign, you know, he's got his first show coming up in 2017?
December 10th.
December 10th, okay? So that's going to be a bit interesting. Now, the one thing that I think we all got to admit, and I think we've said it numerous times here on Leaving the Ring, is that he is a good businessman. I mean, he did start, he was able to finagle his way into certain dates. He was able to kind of get certain things moved along. But at some point, you got to ask yourself or the people in the industry, how much of it was really Schaefer and how much of it was Al Haymon?
No, I think that definitely, you know, Richard Schaefer has proven to be a great businessman. You know, I think that he was instrumental in bringing in some new sponsors into the boxing world. I mean, sponsors that possibly we had not seen the type of before. You know, usually in the 80s and the 90s, we were looking at like at beer companies and things like that as far as sponsors. And he brought in like DeWalt, the tool company. He brought in Southwest Airlines. He brought other kinds of sponsorships. So I think that that's a good thing for him as far as what he has done. I don't think it was so much Al Haymon. I think it was Richard Schaefer really going out there and you know, knocking on doors and trying to do things differently. Being that, you know, he didn't grow up in the boxing business. He didn't grow up in the boxing world. If anything, Al Haymon has been around boxing. His brother was a professional fighter, so he must have known the ins and outs and from his brother's experience and everything. But Richard Schaefer, I mean, the only thing he knew about boxing was Oscar De La Hoya. So when he started, he pretty much started blind. So he had a different way of thinking as far as the business of it. And he made
Let me ask you this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't heard much about, what is it, Ring Star? I think it's called Ring Star
Sports. Ring Star Sports.
Ringo Star. sports and stuff. But because, you know, remember when the divorce happened between Golden Boy, when Oscar kind of realized what they were doing to his company and what they were going to do to him, he quickly just got rid of that part, right? And the divorce was, okay, who was going to stay with Golden Boy and who was going to leave without Heyman? But that was just that just wasn't with fighters. There was a staff, and he mentioned that staff to Steve Kim. I'm wondering, have you heard who's going to be the matchmaker for Ringstar, or is it still going to be, you know, PVC people that are going to be doing things for him? Hold on, man. I'm sorry, my dog. And, you know, I mean, who's he swept up? I mean, as some of the folks, the staffs that left Golden Boy, are they with him? Because to me, it's been a little bit of a hush-hush. It hasn't been a whole lot of talk. I've talked to certain people, and it's almost kind of like, you know, he just walked right through the door, came out of the rain, and just walked right in and just took off his raincoat and hung it back on the coat rack.
Well, I think right now, being that this is his first promotion, he's really – you know, asking Al Heyman for help. I mean, obviously we're not in the phone calls, but it seems like it. I mean, he has been talking about coming back. He secured licenses in New York, Nevada, and California to put on shows. And he had mentioned trying to get the Staples Center and trying to get Mikey Garcia. And that's when it seemed like he was really just working on his own, you know, and because Mikey Garcia has no ties to Al Heyman or anybody else at this point after he got rid of his contract with Top Rank. So it looked like Richard Schaefer was really going after it on his own to a certain extent. But I think when those plans fell through, when maybe he couldn't secure something with Mikey Garcia or the Staples Center, I think he asked Al Heyman for help. And he said, hey, let me have a couple of fights that you may want to put on but haven't had a chance. Case in point, Abner Mattis against Jesus Cuellar after that fight fell through because of Abner Mattis not being able to fight in New York because of his eye condition. You know, that fight has been talked about a couple of times of coming back and a new date, and it never really got produced. And now it has, you know. Obviously, Jesus Cuellar and Abner Mattis are with Al Heyman, and also the semi-main event of Jermall Charlo against Julian Williams. So I think Al Heyman is you know, instrumental in this return, or at least in this fight card. I'm sure that he had a talk with Showtime as well, as far as putting it on December 10th. But I think Richard Schaefer, hopefully he steps out of the Al Heyman shadow and signs fighters on his own right and starts putting together things his own right.
Let's get down to it, because here's the thing, okay? Obviously, we knew he was going to come back. We just didn't know when he was going to come back. I mean, that was already – the writing was on the wall that Schaefer was going to come back. You know, whether you like it or not, whether you want him back in the sport, it was going to happen, okay? So my thing is this, okay? So, you know, he does an interview with Steve and says, hey, I'm willing to work with Top Rank. I'm willing to do this, which I got to say, he's been a little disillusional, because I just don't see that happening anytime soon. Because if Al Heyman and them haven't resolved or moved forward or set anything up, I just don't see Richard Schaefer coming in and, you know, being the mediator between the two and bringing everybody back to a kumbaya, right? So I just don't see him working around not being the backdoor guy for Al Heyman here. You know what I mean? I mean, that's pretty much – he was the face for Al with Golden Boy. Why wouldn't he not continue to be the face for PBC? Because, you know, I think what the transition would be later on is that he will be the main guy, and the name PBC would disappear, and it'll just be Ringstar Promotions.
Ringstar Sports. Ringstar Sports.
Because, yeah, who is he going to sign? I mean, everybody's pretty much tied up. Is he going to try to go after Olympians? He's going to have to compete with Floyd Mayweather. I mean, is he going to help out? I mean, Floyd, I mean, I'm just wondering where he fits in everything, because if he's thinking to start his own thing and be independent, I just don't see that happening at all. No matter how good of a business guy he is, he had a product. I mean, remember this. He had a brand. He had Oscar De La Hoya, Golden Boy, which he was able to move forward and sell, because everybody here in the States knew Oscar. You know, it was an easy sell. You know, a gold medalist, movie star looks, been in great fights, had great rivalries. you know, pay-per-views up the yin-yang, broke records, whatever you can. That was a brand that was already established. I don't know how he's going to do that alone as just Richard Schaefer.
Well, I mean, obviously money talks, you know, and if he's able to secure money through sponsorships, TV contracts, or whatever the case may be, you know, he might. I mean, I would see it as a good move if actually Al Heyman ended up funding everything through him and not through, like, you know, these other smaller promoters that he's been using. Because if anything, Richard Schaefer is a proven commodity. He's proven he was with Golden Boy for 14 years. He was a co-founder of Golden Boy. He basically, I mean, in my eyes, because he was the businessman, and during the majority of that time that he was running the day-to-day business of Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya was obviously not there and not really doing the hands-on for whatever reason, problems that he had and things he was doing. So the guy that really made Golden Boy into what it is now, with the TV networks and with the fans and with the and everything, was Richard Schaefer, you know. Now the way
right,
that
right.
he left,
but this
the
wheel was already the wheel was already spinning. You know what I mean? To me, that wheel was already spinning. This is something from the ground up. This is something that hasn't been proven to me from Schaefer yet. Can he build a company from the ground up?
No, I don't agree with
you.
I don't agree that it's from the ground up. A company that's coming up from the ground up does not get their first promotion on Showtime. You know, so he has a contact. People know who he is within the industry.
But still, that's not even based on him, though. That's not even from him. That's
yeah,
just the house.
But it's who you know.
Hated. You know what
but
I mean?
It's who you know.
Yeah.
But it's who you know. It's who you know. And he
that's
knows
what
about
I'm saying,
him.
Though.
And he knows.
Why would
I mean,
he even make
even
the suggestion that he would detach himself from that? You know what I mean? Like, why would he make that? He's not going to detach himself from that.
No, he's not going to detach himself. But if Al Heyman ends up funneling everything that he has through him, and you know, and it's not TGB Promotions and not DiBella Entertainment and not Banner Promotions and all these other guys that he's using, then Schaefer's in the driver's seat. You know, I mean, Steven Espinosa, the president of Showtime Sports, at one point worked for Richard Schaefer.
Schaefer, yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah.
He
was a lawyer.
So exactly. He was the lawyer for Golden Boy. So he has all the contacts that he needs. And I don't think he's going to break away, but I think Richard Schaefer, I met him. I don't know him, but just because of who
he
is. And
right.
I think he wants to be
he
the top
He doesn't break
dog.
Away. He moves in.
No,
I'm telling you.
But
he's
wants
break
to
break away.
To
he's moving in on the chair.
I don't think he wants to take orders from Al Heyman. He wants to work with Al Heyman, but I think he wants to be the guy calling the shots. If he's going to fly, he's going to fly on his own accord. If he's going to, you know, crash down and burn, it's going to be on him. And I think that's how he wants it. Is he going to take a helping hand from Al Heyman? Of course. Who wouldn't? You know, when your first promotion can be done at the Galen Center at USC and broadcast on Showtime, why wouldn't you do that? You know, but I think one point, and I think just to finish off, and I think that if he does want to work with Golden Boy Top Rank, it has to be with either fighters that he's going to represent as a promoter that may be with Al Heyman, and he's going to do the deal, or he's
right.
going to sign fighters. He's going to sign fighters on his own, and then be able to work with those fighters in a fight against a Golden Boy fighter, or a Top Rank fighter,
which won't be anytime soon. Wouldn't be anytime soon. Because he needs to develop whoever. Well, I mean, it depends on
he could pick up
fighter he gets. You know what I mean?
Hey, he can pick up Mikey Garcia. Mikey Garcia hasn't signed with anybody. If he promises him, you know, astronomical purses, guaranteed purses, and he features them on Showtime, why wouldn't Mikey Garcia sign with him? It's Richard Schaefer is he's a proven promoter. I mean, it would make more sense for Mikey Garcia to sign with the Richard Schaefer than with the Floyd Mayweather. As far as business is concerned, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, almost definitely. I mean, Floyd
still
hasn't proven how good of a promoter
exactly.
he can be, you know?
Yeah.
Here's the thing that I think is – and we're going to be taking some calls right now in a few minutes. If you want to call in 347-215-7598, our phone lines are starting to stack up. But most interesting scenario if he's – decides to say, hey, I'm going to do my own thing. You know, I'm going to take some little help from you, Al, because, you know, you got these dates and I'm trying to get back in. I'm trying to get my feet back, you know, on the ground. I'm trying to get my hands on certain fighters. Is he does become another identity in the sport as a major player So now we got four major players in the game. Okay, because, you know, the truth of the matter is, you know, like Lou DiBella and Warriors and all them, they really work under the banner of Al. I mean, they have their fighters sign, but a lot of those dates have already been secured by Al Heyman, right? PBC.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, most of them, you know, I don't want to say like, you know, those guys, they're not doing their job. They're obviously they're doing their part. Right. But they're getting that push from the monies that come in from the investments of Al Heyman's people. Right. So I'm interested because the fact that we did mention that Richard Schaefer is a good business guy. So there's a big part of business that he does bring in that you just said right now, Felipe. Tell me if I'm wrong. He does know how to get investors to drop major money into ideas that he has. So I think that's what kind of plays into his favor, and I think that might be the conflict of with him and Al Heyman. That's what I'm interested in. But like I said, I still think that he's the guy that's just going to move in the office and he becomes the face of whatever Al's controlling. But you're saying, no, he doesn't like to take orders. He doesn't want to take orders. So the other scenario would be is that, well, he gets a big investment and then – I mean, we saw him try to do it with Oscar. Why wouldn't he do it with Al Heyman?
I think that would have to be the agreement with Al Heyman. And it wasn't. I don't think Richard Schaefer went in there and moved Oscar the lawyer. I mean, I think it was an agreement between them that, hey, Oscar said, I'm the face of the company. I'm the golden boy. You know, I got other things that I'm doing. You go ahead and run the company as you see fit. Obviously, you and I are gonna talk. And we're going to decide certain things, but you do the day-to-day, just like Eric Gomez does the day-to-day now as the president of the company. I think that if he comes to that agreement with Al Heyman, says, hey, you want to put everything through me, I'll do the day-to-day. Obviously, you and I will talk, you know, that might be the case. Who knows? I mean, obviously, you and I are not Richard Schaefer or Al Heyman, so we're just speculating. But I think that is something that could work, and I think that would be the best thing for boxing, especially if, to a certain extent, Richard Schaefer and Golden Boy Promotions do at least get into some kind of position where they can at least speak to each other and promote fights. I mean, I'm looking at it from the aspect
what
of
what if
the,
you want to be that fly on the wall, man, just to hear that, you know? I mean, just to see. I'd just like to hear what I'm not, you know, look, I don't think Oscar is – I don't know if he's going to be in favor sitting across Schaefer. I think Eric Gomez – would, because he's smart enough to understand that, you know, it's a business and you kind of move forward. I think he wants to move forward, in my opinion. I think Gomez wants to make fights with the PBC. I mean, why wouldn't he? That would be the right thing to do to continue, right, building your promotional group and to keep bringing money in rather than money just going out. Because right now, let's be honest, the only one that's pulling money in is what, Canelo? I mean, who else would be bringing money in right now for them?
Yeah, and that's the thing.
You know,
and I think
small cards ain't doing much, you know?
No, they're those small cards. They're just loss leaders. They're trying to, you know, build their fighters and get them to the point where they can put them
exactly.
on HBO or one of the bigger networks. But, you know, us as boxing fans, we should hope that, you know, Richard Schaefer gets the, you know, holds the reins for all the fighters that Al Heyman has and then that he can – you know, get into a conversation with Golden Boy and Top Rank, because that could only mean that we are going to see better fights that we saw in 2016. And as boxing fans, that's the only thing that we should be caring about. I mean, I don't really care.
It could lead to that, or it could lead into, again, like I said, because of a familiar face that obviously two other parties didn't want to see come back. They stay reserved. And then nothing's resolved. Nothing gets moved forward. So it's going to be an interesting 2017. Obviously, we're going to find out what happens on December 10th with his, you know, first fight back, his first, you know, being the promoter seat back, right? Let's take some phone calls really quick, man. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Showtime 2017 schedule that they announced for Showtime that Espinoza threw out there. And we'll give you a little bit of our take about that. Let's go with area code. 503, you're on live right now. Leave it. What's on your mind?
Hey, yo, what up? Hey, what up, Gabriel? Hey, do you think you can come back to me like in 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, absolutely, brother. I'll put you back on hold.
All right, thanks, man.
Okay, let's go. Area code 111. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind? 111, you out there?
What up, guys?
Oh, there he is. Hold on. What's up, man? How you doing, brother?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. What you got for us?
You know what? I mean, the only thing in my mind about Schaefer coming back is putting up exciting fights. As far as, you know, all the promotional contract and all the disputes that they had in the past, I think that, you know, whoever trusts Schaefer, it's going to be hard, you know, for them to look at him like someone that they could rely on or trust for future fights, right? But as far as events and shows, he did what he had to do, and he really put some good cards when he was the face of, almost the face of Golden Boy.
Right. I mean, look, here's the truth is none of these promoters trust each other. You know what I mean? It's a business. They're all trying to gain something a little more than the other guy where they can kind of, you know, gloat around like, I'm the best promoter there is out there. That's why that, you know, every business is competitive. So it's all about, can these guys push aside their personal emotions about each other and move forward? Because, you know, I think the problem with what's going to be with Golden Boy and Top Rank is that you had Al Haymon and Schaefer where they had, like, you know, it was Binky in the brain. Remember, you know, I'm going to control the whole world. That's what they want. They wanted that monopoly. But in reality, so did Golden Boy and Top Rank. They want the monopoly as well. So that's what I'm wondering. Is it going to stop them from trying to do something? We're going to find out in 2017.
Well, you know, I just finished reading the article that you mentioned. I didn't know that Steve Hedlund had posted, and he says it on there. I mean, he says that he's going to be independent of the PBC, that he is going to work with them in somewhat, but he wants to sign his own fighters and he wants to work out his own deals with the networks and with venues. So, you know, I mean, I think he could do it. If anybody could do it, it's Richard Schaefer. He has the experience. He has the contacts. You know, he's saying that he wants to work together with Golden Boy and Bob Arum. I think Bob Arum would definitely work with him. I mean, Bob Arum says a lot of things, but when it comes down to business, Bob Arum talks. You know, he did it with Don King. He did it with Golden Boy after the Cold War. And then I think he would do it with Richard Schaefer if it made financial sense for more of his side, but for both parties as well. So I agree with the caller is that at the end of the day, Richard Schaefer, when he was the head of Golden Boy Promotions, he put on some great fights, you know, and that's what we should – hope for, and that's what should be the merits that we form our opinion, at least for now, in his new company, Ringstar Sports. You know, his first event, even though they are Al Haymon fighters, it's a good fight card, good even fights. That's what he's known for to a certain extent. So I think that, you know, the past is the past. You know, obviously we know things about him that maybe he doesn't want us to know. But we have to form our opinion of his new company on that, on the fights that he puts on, and then just go from there.
I mean, look, obviously, he's, you know, if you really think about it, he's not just jumping in. I you know, and he even mentions that, you know, it's been, over a year already since you know, the –
2 years.
Since the no-compete has – you know, been lifted. Yeah, no company's been lifted. I think, it's like a year or so, right?
A year.
So you figure within that year, you know he's got to have been talking to Al Haymon and working things out. Because, see, even though he's a smart guy and he's put on good fights, he's got some connections, the dates are where it's really got to happen. He's got to have the dates.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that within that year, he's had to been sitting down with Al. He's had to been sitting down and asking, what dates could I have? Because that, to me, is the most important part, is the amount of dates that Showtime can dish out, the amount of dates that CBS or anybody else can dish out in order for him to move forward with his promotional group, right? That's the big question.
Well,
how many of those dates does he have?
Well, who's to say that Al Haymon even gave him this date? Maybe he went out and got it himself. Maybe he got into a conversation with Steven Espinosa and told him, hey, let me have a date. I'll get you some good fights and let me try. And Steven said, I mean, the landscape for Showtime was, the schedule for Showtime by what we've seen in the last month, has been completely open. So maybe he got the date first, went to talk to Al, told him, give me a fight, give me a couple of fights, and there we have it. We got these fights.
Is it on his dollar? That's what I want to know. I'm sorry, man. You got anything else for us, brother?
No, I'm good. Thanks, guys.
Okay. I want to know, is it on his dollar? I think that should be the next question. Is it on Richard Schaefer's dollar still on this promotional event happening December 10th, or is it on Al Heyman's?
Well, it's being co-promoted. It's being co-promoted by TJB Promotions, which is the promotional company that Tom Brown
company,
runs.
Right.
The former matchmaker, brother-in-law of the fallen Dan Goosen, and it's being co-promoted by Ringstar Sports. Obviously, there's a broadcasting fee getting in from Showtime. So I'm sure he's investing some money. You know, I'm sure he's putting up some of his money. But, you know, Showtime is giving up a licensing fee as well. So,
because I think that's going to be the telling, don't Felipe? I think that's where we're going to really know, is he in the direction of being independent, or is he in the direction of just being another front for Al Heyman to maneuver behind? That's what I think is going to answer a lot of questions that we have.
Well, according to the interview, I mean, he has the intentions of being independent, but obviously, we're going to have to wait for his –
We're going to have to wait for the work
to
be laid out.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to have to wait for the work to be. Mm-hmm. Let's go, before we go into that fight schedule real quick, because I want to talk about that Showtime 2017 schedule, man. Area code 714, you're online right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind? 714, you out there, brother? Okay, let's go back. Let's go to area code 805. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind? 805.
What up, gentlemen? Thanks for taking my call. It's Armando from Oxnard.
Armando, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
¿Cómo estamos? ¿Todo bien?
All good.
All good, brother. All good. I think Felipe's over there having, what are you having, Modelo, Felipe? What are you doing?
Tecate.
Oh,
the official sponsor.
That's like Mexican Budweiser, bro. What's wrong with you?
No, it's not, dude. It's way better than that. Official sponsor, Julio César Chávez. Yeah, and it's official sponsor, Julio César Chávez Jr., so I got to support.
All right. what do you got for us, Armando?
I had the option to either go to the Ward fight or the Lomachenko fight to actually buy a ticket, and I actually chose the Walters versus Lomachenko. Do you guys think I made the right choice?
As far as action, definitely.
Yeah,
as far as action, definitely.
So. Right.
You know? At this point, we don't know.
You know what? Remember this, Felipe. Remember we had talked that, you know, this is what we think could happen with Kovalev and Ward. It could end up to being another Postol versus Crawford. You know, a very one-sided, boring fight.
I was there. Yeah. Don't remind me, please. Don't remind me.
You're not driving, right, Armando? Because if we remind you, you're driving, you might get into an accident. You might fall asleep from just from remembering. But No, he hasn't shown up since. We haven't heard anything from him since. But
was signed and delivered by Crawford. So wherever he's landed, I don't know.
Yeah. I think that if it becomes an Andre Ward fight, then obviously it can be that kind of fight. So as far as action, you made the better choice in Lomachenko against Walters.
That's what I saw too, and I never been to the Chelsea, and I wanted to check it out. So in January, do I go to the Gaylord Center or do I go to the MGM?
Well, which the Gaylord Center fights at it's December 10th. Schaefer fight, it's December 10th.
Oh shit! I thought it was in January. The Morris and the Charlo. Is that December?
No, that's December 10th.
Yeah, it's December 10th.
Oh shit! Sorry about that. Son. I'm going to get to go to both. Sorry about that.
Which one are you going to go? You're going to go to
Brampton
against
Santa
Cruz?
No.
Bob
and Leo had no fans in New York, so I got to go help them out real quick and just clap.
Clap
because
and
if
show
the
you.
Same way, it doesn't matter if it's old man there or not. He's not going to win. Brampton's lateral movement and that jab just fucked him up. Completely fucked him up.
Mm. Well, it was pretty close. I mean, it was pretty close. I mean, I did have Frampton winning, but it was pretty close. So I mean, can Santa Cruz? Go ahead.
No, you're right. Can you take a punch and like dish one out? That basically.
I mean, can Leo Santa Cruz really learn from this? I mean, here you have a guy that hadn't lost in 20-something fights, 30-something fights, 32 fights. He hadn't lost 33 because he has a draw. And, you know, this is what champions are made of. You know, can the guy at 28 years old learn from the mistakes that he did against Carl Frampton, maybe start off too late, maybe not close off the ring so well, and use that? If he learns from that, and changes that part of it, and Frampton fights the same, Santa Cruz can win the fight, you know. And then we have a trilogy. So this is where we're going to see what kind of champion Leo Santa Cruz is. Is it a guy that's going to fight the same and expect a different result, or a guy that's actually going to change his strategy, change the way that he fights to be able to beat the guy that beat him? So I mean, that's what makes that fight compelling in late January.
Well, here's the thing, too. I mean, look, here's the thing, too, is Carl Frampton fought almost a perfect fight. Could he do that again? You know, I don't think he always with Leo, you know, so much. You know what I mean? Can Leo switch it up? Could he add a little bit to what he was doing? I mean, because in the overall of the first fight, he was being Leo, and he was attacking. He was landing. The pace was exhausting. So I just wonder, could Frampton muster it up all over again, be hyped up for a rematch, or do we see a guy that's been, you know, celebrating and goes back in still celebrating and really didn't train to the extent he did for the first time? That's going to be the interesting part.
Well, I don't think Frampton is fucking Tyson Fury, so I think he's going to come ready.
Yeah. Well, he'll come ready. Yeah, definitely. So, man, anything else we got? Anything else you got for us, brother?
Thank you, fellas. Great show.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
So, anyways, as we've heard, the Showtime 2017 schedule has been announced. Let me ask you, Felipe, really quick, man. Real good matches that they're saying that's going to happen. The only problem I have with it is that they made the announcement, but the load may not be – it may not come through. Because the fact that, you know, you got March, all the way down to March, you got Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia. They're looking to have a showdown, but it, you know, between this time frame, which we've seen with Klitschko getting an injury, Tyson Fury walking out, certain matches, you know, not happening, certain matches have been pushed out and said, but never coming through. I think that's the big point right now for fight fans. You know, is like, I'm excited for it, but at the same time, I'm almost kind of holding my excitement a little back because things could happen in between this time.
Well, yeah, I mean, anything could happen in boxing, you know, especially injuries. I mean, we saw what's going on with Vladimir Klitschko and his injury and everything that was going on with that. But, you know, if we give everything, we give the boxing gods the benefit of the doubt and expect all these fights to happen. You know, I don't know. I mentioned it on the show some time ago that I believe that Showtime was going to come with something, because it was just strange that we had not really heard anything from Showtime. I mean, they really hadn't put on a championship boxing type of card in months and months and months. I said, they got to be holding off for something. They got to be working on something. You can't just shut down a whole department, because it's got to be a department over there in at the Showtime offices. I mean, you got Steven Espinosa. I mean, he's the president of Showtime Sports, but what other sport do they broadcast? I mean, it's only boxing. So I say you can't just shut down a whole department and not be doing anything. They have to be doing something. And, you know, with this recent announcement that they made, I mean, it pretty much showed us what they were doing for the first quarter of 2017.
Let me tell you this. We always talk about the network's budget, but we don't talk about what Heyman's budget was. And it certainly didn't look like Showtime was part of that budget to fit in his pocket.
Well, this
at
is
the
Showtime.
Moment.
No, well, Showtime has its own budget.
Yeah,
you know?
But I'm saying, so for this year, for this year. We're talking about for this year. You know, like then there was no business happening with Showtime, really. You know, they had some spurts, some good fights that happened on their network. But, you know, I think a lot of times fans got to forget, you know, times have been changing with the sport, you know, especially with Al Heyman walking into the sport, that we're not asking what was in the budget for Al Heyman. What networks were in his budget? And we just kind of saw that Showtime wasn't part of the major budget for Al Heyman. But for 2017, we're definitely going to see it. Let me ask you this really quick, man, because I haven't had a chance to talk to a lot of folks. You know, I've been kind of really busy with a lot of other things. But, you know, Vladimir Klitschko claims he has an injury. He was looking down that he was going to fight, Lucas Brown, right? They wanted him to face Lucas Brown because Anthony Joshua, they wanted him, Anthony Joshua, to move, do something else. Let me ask you, do you really think there was an injury, man, or was this a case of I'm not going to fight anybody else because if I lose, then I'm really out of the talks of anything majorly being pushed out there. If I only have a little bit of fight left in me, I'd rather go out with the case of a guy like Anthony Joshua.
You know, it's tough to say. I mean, I read conflicting reports. I read, you know, that he was really pushing to fight on December 10th. That was the last date that the German television network that he's tied onto was they were going to give him. That's the last date of the year that they were going to broadcast boxing. And according to his manager, I forgot the guy's name. His name starts with a B or something. That the network does not broadcast boxing in January or February of any year. So if he didn't fight on December 10th, the fight wasn't going to happen. Any fight wasn't going to happen for him until March. So being 40 years old, having not fought the whole year, having been in a couple of training camps. I mean, if you remember, he was supposed to fight Tyson Fury back in the summer and he was in the training camp there. He was in training camp there. Then he was in training camp again for the October 29th fight, which also fell through. And then he was in training camp, or he continued that training camp in hopes of getting Anthony Joshua on December 10th. Well, actually, it was first November 26th and then December 10th. So, you know, I think he was gearing up for that fight. Lucas Brown, by what I've heard, he asked for too much money. But I think they would have found somebody else if he really truly wanted to fight on December 10th. And for a guy at 40 years old, you know, taking a whole year off, I mean,
well, that's
not
the just
best
thing. I mean, look, let me think about this.
I don't think it's the whole thing about, you know, I'm gonna hold on to this little gas that I have in the tank until, you know, for Anthony Joshua.
Okay, but at 40 years old, listen, 40 years old.
I don't think for 40 years old it works that way. You know, what about all the rust?
But
you don't want to
fight
for a year.
Why
do you mean? You don't want to fight the whole year and then go into an Anthony Joshua fight at the beginning of the year. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that just doesn't make sense.
It does make sense. I mean, look, if you're not going to fight for the title and if you're not going to fight for a lot of money, which you know fighting Joshua Anthony is going to be a shitload of money, you know, and then you're going to have to, you know, go with something else and possibly lose out in one of the biggest fights right now in the heavyweight division, what do you do? I think he just opted like, you know what, forget it. I'm not going to fight anybody else. Why do that? I might as well just hold off. I've been holding off for this long. Why not hold off a little longer?
I see your point, but I don't think it's a good move because, I mean, unless he has
a good move,
fight,
but it is a smart
fight,
financial
you know?
Move, though. It may not be a good move physically, but financially, it's a smart move.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's
does Klitschko. Does Klitschko really have to go for that money? I mean, the guy's made all the money that in the world. You know, I mean,
oh,
the guy's
come
made
on, there's never enough money in the world, brother. You know
that's
that.
True. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, to really like risk. The beating that he's going to receive from Anthony Joshua by going in there, you know,
what
after
about, okay, why,
maybe
okay,
15
why,
months
why
of
risk,
not fighting?
Though, Ira, why risk then going in with something lesser for a lesser amount, take a beating, and then guess what? You're no longer in talks anymore of a Joshua Anthony. You're no more
but
in
who's
talks.
Going to take a beating? Who's he going to take a beating from? Lucas Brown?
Dude, he didn't look that great against Tyson Fury.
Yeah, but Tyson
Fury,
you got to remember it. You got to remember Tyson Fury is like in his mid-20s. That's one. Tyson Fury was the first fighter that was taller than Klitschko. I mean, when was the last time you saw, you know...
when is the last time you've seen
fight a guy
don't
that was
look
taller?
That bad, though? Let me ask you that. When's the last time we've seen him look that terrible? He's been a one-handed fighter.
Brian Jennings. His previous fight. But here's the thing is that when it was to me, the whole loss against Tyson Fury was the style of Tyson Fury. The fact that he was taller, he was longer, he was able to use his jab against Klitschko. When's the last time that Klitschko had to worry about somebody's jab? It's always been his opponent worrying about his jab. So this was the first time that Klitschko had to worry about somebody's jab. So I think it was just more of Tyson Fury's physical advantage and the jab that he was utilizing against
when
Klitschko.
When is the last time? But let me ask you this. When is the last time, though, that Klitschko had to worry about his body not responding when he needs to, about using his jab, throwing his right hand when it needs to be thrown? I mean, we watched him, even though, yeah, you're right about Tyson Fury, younger guy, tall guy, used a jab, was moving around. But with Brian Jennings as well, he just looked off. And mm-hmm. You could tell Father Time has really caught up to him. And this next fight, whoever it is that you know, the WBC, WBA, or anybody, any sanctioned body was trying to set him up for, you know, I think he knows – that the end is near, my friend. And why go out for just a few mil when you could take the whole barrel of millions and be part of one of the biggest fights in history at the moment? You know, obviously he's going to go out there. He's a champion. He believes that he can win. But I think too, there's something in the back of their minds where it's like, hey, listen, let's just hold off.
I think that he's a champion. He believes he's going to win. So if that's the case, why would he go into an Anthony Joshua fight without a tune-up after more than a year of not fighting? That's my whole, me thinking that it wasn't fake.
Right, right.
Fake injury.
That's you thinking you're a fighter. Well, I'm thinking his management, his people behind him are saying, hey, no, let's just hold off. Let's hold off. You know what I'm saying?
Because if we're thinking like you're thinking, then he's just cashing out. And I don't think Vladimir Klitschko is the kind of guy to cash out.
Well, I don't think he knows he's cashing out. That's just my point. But let me patch in Lenny the Fight Smith here really quick here. Lenny, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Hey, guys. Long time no speak.
I know, man. I just saw your face on a milk carton the other day. what's going on, brother?
I
got three Chicanos online right now.
On a milk carton lately, shit.
Right? What do you got for us, brother? What do you think, man?
You know, the funny thing about the whole heavyweight division, I never trust Eddie Hearn as far as I can throw the guy. They just the whole negotiation seems super fishy. That we had 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we had Klitschko and Anthony Joshua ready to go. And now we have Anthony Joshua fighting Eric Molina and Klitschko on the bench. I mean, it makes no sense to me.
Well, to a certain extent, I mean, I agree with you, but Klitschko never denied the fact that the talks were pretty deep as far as making that fight. And to a certain point, it just came down to the WBA sanctioning
right.
the fight.
I was going
to
say that.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, if I think that Eddie Hearn was pulling our leg collectively, then I think that Klitschko would have said, hey, slow down, this guy, it's not as done as you guys think. But all the reports that we saw and heard, it was pretty much done, and they were just waiting for the WBA to announce that they were going to sanction the fight. And to the point, too, where Klitschko announced that he was hurt, the WBA had not even made a decision yet. It could have still happened as far as the reports that we were getting. So I think they knew, though,
that the WBA wasn't going to sanction it. And I think that's where the injury, you know, came around. Like, you know what, forget it. You know, because the fact that it just seemed like – I think Eddie Hearn was ready to make this. Why wouldn't he want to make this fight happen, right? And I think that it was the WBA that said, hey, I'm going to throw the wrench in there and stop all the talks about it. Because,
money. I'm going to start calling you Mel Gibson, David.
Mel Gibson?
Because you come up – see, Lenny got it. You come up with all these conspiracy theories about people doing this and about people doing that. You're like Mel Gibson in that movie.
I'm pretty right a lot of the times, all right?
Yeah. Hey, Mel Gibson was right in the movie, too.
I think the conspiracy theory has some legs, though, with this one.
Exactly.
Like Anthony Joshua is not like a cash-out guy. He's not like a Charles Martin or whatever his name is, where Al Heyman's going to throw the guy out there, knowing he's probably going to lose, but he's going to get the biggest payday of his career. And the Klitschko, but the Klitschko fight for Anthony Joshua is a similar situation. He could easily lose. Anthony Joshua could easily lose against Klitschko, because, given where he is in his career and the level of competition that he's fought. And but a loss to Anthony Joshua now damages him, his value going forward. If you wait 6 months or he waits a year, takes Klitschko on in a year, that fight could be worth a lot more to Anthony Joshua, probably a lot more to Klitschko. But in
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, Klitschko. Yeah,
but here's the thing.
That was what threw me for a loop when they first started talking about the fight. It just seemed too good to be true. And the idea that maybe Eddie Hearn knew that the WBA was going to have issues sanctioning the fight, giving the number one contender, number one and a half, and number one and two contender position to a guy holding another belt, like that was going to be a holdup or whatever what a holdup was. But throwing those names out there like the fight was going to happen still gets us talking about it, still gets everybody else talking about it. And if the fight does actually happen a year later, we at least have there's some background for it. So the general public and the boxing public are kind of have it on the tip of their tongue.
But I think that it was an educated risk that Eddie Hearn was taking, because who's to say that Klitschko even exists still in a year? You know, what happened here is if Tyson Fury would have not been a cokehead and they would have fought on October 29th, Tyson Fury beats him again, I think Klitschko retires, and then Anthony Joshua never has a chance
to fight
Vladimir Klitschko. So then that fight
if the fights were never in talk, Felipe, I know where you're going with it. Even if they weren't not even in talks, it was a brilliant way of Eddie Hearn's attaching Joshua's name to Klitschko to make fans go, whoa, wait a minute, I want to see that one. The anticipation, it's already there. The buildup's there now. Now people are expecting for that fight to happen, because Tyson Fury has been forgotten.
I think Anthony Joshua could have lost that fight. I agree with you. If that fight would have happened, I would have had a Klitschko a little bit of a slight favorite just because of his experience and his physical, being taller.
I think he would have stopped Klitschko.
And his right hand, you know. But if Joshua beats him, then Joshua just becomes the biggest name in the heavyweight division, you know, and he steps right up there, beating a guy that's been in the quote-unquote pound-for-pound list for 15 years, per se. You know, I think he deserves to be on there. I mean, the guy's been somewhat of a unified world champion for all those years. And
dominant.
I think that's when you know, Eddie Hearn said, you know, this is our chance to really up our name by beating this guy. This is a perfect chance. He hasn't fought in over a year. We could beat him. We might not ever get this chance. And I think that was the calculated risk they were willing to take on December 10th. You know, Klitschko saying that he wants to fight in early 2017, but just like he got hurt this time or didn't, but he's not fighting, who's to say that he even fights again and they might have lost their chance of beating Vladimir Klitschko?
Good point. Yeah. And let me ask you really quick, Lenny, what are you most excited about the Showtime announcement for 2017 schedule?
I like the January 28th card's great. The Francis Santa Cruz fight was awesome the first time around. I'd love to see it again. I think the Zlatkanin and Mikey Garcia fight's going to be good. I mean, the big one, obviously, is the March 4th Danny Garcia-Keith Thurman fight. But my concern with whenever they announce, like, four cards in the next 6 months or 8 months down the line is delayed, especially when Keith Thurman's involved and the PBC's involved. I bet you.
Well, let me ask you this.
I'll put the over under on how many of these major fights to get announced.
Well, let me ask you: out of all the fights that were announced, which one for both of you guys to answer this? Which one do you think is not going to happen on the date that was said?
Either the Adrian Broner fight, just because he's a cannon. Or the Keith Thurman Danny Garcia fight. I mean, the Danny Garcia or Keith Thurman's, he could easily get into another fender bender or whatever, and then we get that fight in December of next year.
I'm gonna put my money on Garcia and Thurman. I think it's gonna be pushed. I think something's gonna come up.
Let me ask you this.
Well, let me hold on before you ask me this. You haven't said who do you think? Which one do you think?
I think Broner, really? For the same reasons that Lenny the Fight Smith has just stated. You know, Broner is a loose cannon, and he might even, you know, he might go steal some little girl's bike out outside of a 7-Eleven for all we know. He's a nutcase, you know. But, you know, my question for you both is, which fight do you think is a closer fight, Danny Garcia against Keith Thurman, or Sergey Kovalev against Andre Ward? Which one do you think is a more of a pick 'em fight?
Ooh. God, that's a good question, man.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
Go ahead, Lenny. You go first. I'll piggyback behind you.
I don't know what weight class the Danny Garcia Keith Thurman fight's going to be at, but if Danny gets a pound or two, I think Danny has the edge in that one. I still haven't picked the Kovalev Ward fight. I have no idea how to pick that fight. I'm leaning Andre Ward by on points, but I mean that's going to be a close, ugly fight.
That's going to be a really It's either going to be a really close fight or it's going to be a one-sided fight. You know, I'm hoping it's going to be a close fight. But going
the
back
Garcia,
with Garcia,
the Garcia Thurman fight is going to be at welterweight. It's going to be they're unifying.
Yeah,
the
147,
titles.
Right? Yeah, right. So 147. You know, I don't know, Matt, because you know the thing with Thurman is that he fights to the level of his opponent. I just keep seeing him do that over and over. Where Danny's kind of fell in love after showing that KO power over a Khan. He fell in love with it. Then he fought Lucas Matisse, where he showed a different face. You know, he kind of went back to his old style box. I just don't know if he's going to be able to do that again. Is he going to have another Lucas Matisse night against Keith Thurman? But then again, Keith, you know, dude, Keith seems to like to get into fights and doesn't sometimes use that ring generalship that he once brought to the table. So I think they're both at a level right now that it's a pick 'em fight, in my opinion. Who comes in with a little bit more in their game plan?
Go ahead.
Oh, the Garcia Thurman fight I think is going to be the way more fan friendly fight of the two.
Those guys
I think can mix it up.
Yeah, I think that Danny Garcia Keith Thurman fight is a closer fight. The odds should be closer for that fight than Kovalev Ward.
You think so? You think the odds?
Yeah.
I think the odds are going to sway with Thurman, dude.
It's going to be closer. I think the odds are with Ward right now. I think a lot of people are picking Ward over Kovalev, but I think they're going to be closer odds for Thurman Garcia than Ward Kovalev Ward.
I don't know. That might change on fight night with Ward. I think it might be a little closer when it happens on fight night, but I think with Keith Thurman, and not because of the styles, but because of the dislike of Danny Garcia, that the odds are gonna be with Keith, which I don't think it should be. I think exactly what you think. It should be, you know, really close to each other. But I think that because of the fact that Danny's not a likable guy, and so many fight fans don't like the kid, that they're just going to pick for Keith to come out and, you know, blast him out of there.
I hope that fight gets made. And they're talking about it being on CBS Sports. If that fight gets on CBS, on CBS, if that fight gets on CBS, I think it could really start off the 2017 with a bang, because I think that's a great fight.
That's a major bang. And remember what I told you? I said, dude, they're not looking to put that on pay-per-view. They're not looking to do it. That's not the model that they do, and that's a brilliant move.
But it made sense because to me, it's the same kind of fight as against Terrence Crawford, Victor Postol, two undefeated world champions unifying the titles. You know, but if Al Heyman puts it on CBS, I mean, I'm not a pro or con Al Heyman guy. You know, I'll leave that to other people. But Jesus H. Christ, I mean, you got to give Al Heyman props for putting that fight on CBS.
He's understanding the economy at the moment. You know, fight fans are tired of pay per view. You know, there's been too many pay per views we've dished out for, and not enough of them have delivered. You know, I mean, really, honestly, I can't even think of one off the top of my head where I said, wow, man, I really felt like I got my money worth with all the fights that were put on there. You know, and I think that direction of what him putting it on CBS is a good direction of also drawing in the fight fans that fans have said have been turned off because of the Mayweather-Pacquiao.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that Al Heyman would have been the guy that with this fight, just to saying, would have, you know, turned it around to a certain extent from that fight to this fight, even though he was instrumental in making that first fight as well.
However, though, he's got to promote it, though, Felipe. Let's be honest, right? I mean, Lenny, he's terrible at promoting fights. So if he doesn't promote it, he doesn't push it out there. He doesn't get these two guy faces in every household and try to get fight fans. I mean, you know, casual fans and fight fans that have been turned off back in front of the seat of their television to watch it. Then there was no point. There was no point to it.
I you know, it's funny because as soon as I called in, you guys were talking about Richard Schaefer, and as shitty of a dude as he is, if he ends up taking over as kind of the go-to promoter for Al Haymon, I mean, that could be the boon and whatever they need to kind of boost the PBC setup, because the way they've been doing it is they don't promote. It's Al Haymon can't promote. He's not technically a promoter. So instead they use these guys who really don't have skin in the game for the most part. They're just getting a fee, and you're getting mixed success. I mean, Lou DeBell has done okay for some of the New York ones, but the fights, the PBC cards that I've been to with two or three now on the West Coast and RGB or whatever that promotion company is, two of the three that I've been to, empty. The two Leo Santa Cruz fights that I went to out here were empty. There's nobody there. They're not promoting. They check the box. They sign the paperwork and turn the paperwork to the commission, and that's it. But hopefully, if this Richard Schaefer thing and Ring Star or whatever becomes like a bigger thing and they're actually promoting
Ringo Star,
maybe that in combination with these fights that they're making would be what kind of gets PBC finally to the next level, because their inconsistency's been killer.
That fight should really be at the Barclays Center. I mean, with Danny Garcia being from Philadelphia and Thurman being from Florida, I mean, at least from the East Coast, I mean, hopefully some Florida people go up to New York for that fight. And, you know, that should really be DeBella Entertainment putting down that fight.
It's
going to
be at the Silverdome. It's going to be in Michigan again at the Silverdome.
I think Richard Schaefer is the perfect candidate for the return of the technical draw, you know. I think that Lenny the Feistman should take him on in the second episode of his show.
Oh my God! You really want to get him. You really want to get his face on a milk carton, right, for boxing?
Oh, that would. Hey, Richard, I'll do it.
Yeah. Hell yeah! So you guys think that the one that's going to be pushed back is, let's just go over this again, is the Broner fight. I think it's going to be Garcia and Thurman. I think that it's going to be pushed back. It's going to be postponed for a minute. And you're going to see the heart attacks going all over, you know, all over social media. And but let me ask you this. Out of the whole, which one do you think is the best fight out of all the announcements? Which one's the one that really stands out where you're going, this is going to be the filler?
Obviously, it's that one. Garcia, tell me. And how many times, what's the count now of David Duenya saying, let me ask you this on this show, 15 times?
16, okay?
I learn how to count, cabrón. Francis Santa Cruz is going to be good again, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good one right there.
Let me ask you. See, now you got me saying this.
Hey, look at you. Let me ask you. What do you want to ask me, huh? Let me ask you this.
Do you think that the fight being in Las Vegas gives somewhat of an advantage to Leo Santa Cruz? I mean, the last one was in New York. When we watched it on TV, you know, when Frampton got announced, I mean, there was a big Irish contingent inside the venue. So obviously here in Las Vegas, you're going to have some Irish people there. They're going to fly over. But I think the bigger crowd is going to be the Mexican crowd. Do you think that's going to give an advantage to Leo Santa Cruz?
Dude, I think it's going to be half and half. Because the fact what Carl did the first time, I think it's going to draw more fans on his favor to come out to Vegas, to tell you the truth. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a major advantage because I don't know. I don't think Leo still kind of brings or draws that big Mexican fan base yet. Do you guys think he does? I don't think he does.
I mean, the thing is, if the first fight would have been weird on the cards, like if the cards would have been super skewed in one direction or the other, and then I would say, yeah, maybe coming out here and getting a little bit more of an even fan base would give him an advantage. But I think the judges were pretty spot on in the first fight. But I think where he does have the advantage, or where he could have the advantage, depending on how good his dad trains him, how good his team is being able to have already seen Carl Frampton live in person and Leo having kind of felt his power, felt what he does right, what he doesn't do right, and being able to kind of learn from that and grow, like you guys were saying earlier. This is where boys become men, when you can come back at the championship level and be a guy who already beat you. We'll see what Leo Santa Cruz has. If he comes back and turns it up, then that'll be awesome. I'd love to see the third fight.
I think really quick, I want to hear the reports and news of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. that Felipe had. He said you were going to bring that up today, man. Let's hear it. What do you got?
All right, here we go. This is what I got. I got this information earlier today. The opponent, this Dominic Brecht from Germany, is the opponent as of now. You know, he is confirmed. The fight's going to take place on December 10th. But even though they are promoting it and they're already, you know, putting out digital banners and digital flyers on the internet, on social media and all that, that it's going to be in Monterrey, Mexico, it's not set in stone that it's going to be in that city. It looks like Mexico City is making a play for it, and also the home state of Sinaloa for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is also making a play for it, offering site fees to go against what Monterrey is doing. But from what I heard and from the report that I got is that Tecate, obviously the beer, the one that I just drank, is that they want it in Monterrey. So they put up a site fee to do it in Monterrey. But if the state of Sinaloa, the governor, who is known as a huge boxing supporter, and pretty much every fight that happens in that state in Sinaloa is somehow financed by the government and by him being the governor, he really wants to make a play for it. So I believe that early next week, if it changes, it's going to be announced early next week. If not, then it's going to stay in Monterrey December 10th on the Azteca channel, and I'm going to be there. I'm going to make the trip.
So do we finally consider, let me ask you guys this, man. Do we finally say he's not a fighter anymore? He's more of a sideshow. He's more of a, you know, a butterbean type of deal. I don't know where to exactly put this kid at, because I don't know where he's trying to, where is he trying to go with this now, you know?
That's ridiculous. Come on. Butterbean, to go to the extreme.
That's right.
Of Butterbean
was actually pretty good fighter.
No, he was the king of the four rounders. You know, to go to the extreme of putting him in the same par as Butterbean, that's ridiculous. I mean, the guy's 30 years old. He was a former world champion. Yes, he's not disciplined. Yes, he likes to smoke weed. Yes, he's the son of, you know, the biggest Mexican fighter that's ever
lived.
That's
all he's got, though, bro. That's all he has. That's all he has. That's a hang on right now. Is he has the last name of a legend. But other than that, I mean, the guy stepped up. When the guy finally stepped up against Sergio Martinez, he was bigger than him, and he got his ass handed to him. I mean, there's got to be a point where you say, this guy's not a fighter. He's just a sideshow. The name is the only thing that's going to draw people to go and see him. But are they going to go see him because he's a great fighter, or he has the potential of being a great fighter at 30 years old? No, absolutely not.
Nobody said the guy was a great fighter. Who said that? But the guy's a fighter. I mean, you can't do 51 fights, 49-2, and one draw against, you know, named fighters.
Yes,
and
you
not
can.
Be a,
if
and
you're
not
Julio
be a fighter.
Cesar Chavez Jr. and you have the prince privilege. Okay, you heard of white privilege. This guy's got the Julio Cesar Chavez superstar privilege here. So of course you can.
Yeah, but you go in there in the ring with like a John Duddy and Andy Lee. If you're just a sideshow, you don't beat these guys. Andy Lee was a former world champion. Billy Joe Saunders
beat
him for the WBO.
You beat those guys. Yeah. He beat those guys, dude, three times. Lenny, come on, please. The voice of reason, jump in on anytime you feel like. He beat those guys 3-4 times heavier when he stepped into the ring. He didn't beat them fair and square.
Okay, so he's the first fighter to weigh in the night before at a certain weight and then come in heavier the next night? He's the first fighter to ever do that? And to win?
I think he's reached carnival mode, personally. He skews more Butterbean than Mike Tyson, or Mike Tyson in his prime these days, even though he probably weighs more than Mike Tyson in his prime.
There you go. There you go.
But my problem with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is he doesn't seem like he likes to fight. It's been a while since he, or I don't even know if he ever really kind of seemed like he liked boxing. And that, I mean, if you don't have that, all he really has is his name.
There's been other fighters
still gonna
that
come out and watch him.
There's other fighters that don't like boxing. Mikey Garcia has publicly stated that he doesn't even like boxing, that he's just good at it. You know, and that's how he makes his money. And Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. makes money. Yeah, Mikey Garcia is a better fighter, and he's a world champion. He's undefeated, and he's disciplined, and he's all that. But I think that by putting them closer to Butterbean than to Mike Tyson, I think that's, you know, that's very skewed. I mean, you don't get to beat like an Andy Lee or a John Duddy or a fighter or fighters of that. Even a Marcos Reyes, who was his last fight, you don't beat guys like that by just being the son of Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. You just don't beat those kind of guys. They would have knocked him out.
I completely disagree. You do when you have everything in your favor. You have everything switched on you at the last minute.
They're holding Andy Lee. They tied Andy Lee's arm. They tied one of Andy Lee's arm behind his back.
Hey, Brian Vera. Listen, Brian Vera, okay? What happened? They changed the weight at the last minute.
Brian Vera is an ESPN fighter. Yeah, he beat him. You know, I'm talking about the names that he beat. Former champ, Andy Lee. You know, not a champion, but a tough, tough fighter in John Duddy. You know, he beat these guys. You know, you don't beat those guys if you're not a fighter. You know, is he a world-class fighter? Is he an elite fighter? Is he going to go down in the record books? Is he going to be in the Hall of Fame? No, he's not. But you don't go in there and beat a John Duddy. By you saying that a carnival, a modern-day Butterbean beats those kind of guys, you're not insulting Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. You're insulting John Duddy.
Listen, I'm saying now. Now, I'm not talking about then. You're confusing the time, okay? I'm saying
well, the guy
right
hasn't
now.
Fought. That guy hasn't fought in a
that's
year
just
and
it.
A half.
He's using his name. So where is he? That's what I'm asking you. Do we now consider him as a sideshow, or where is he going to go with this? Because
we got to see what he comes back on. Let's see what he comes back. The fight is scheduled for 169 pounds, which is a pound over 168. Let's see if he makes the weight first. Then once he makes the weight and he fights this guy, then let's see what happens with this guy. I mean, this guy was going to face Gilberto El Zurdo Ramirez for the WBO title at 168 until Ramirez hurt his hand. So, I mean, yeah, he's an unknown. Yeah, he's lost to bums and stuff like that. But the guy was going to fight for a world title. So let's see what weight he comes in. Let's see what he does against Brecht and then come to an opinion about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Let's talk about another Mexican here, Oscar Valdez, which is with Top Rank, and Bob Arum was talking about him today, I believe, at the –
Hopefully my defense of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., somebody listens to it and gets me a free room at the fight.
Cabrón. So you'll get a free room, all right, at the circus. So Bob Arum made a statement, and I don't know, I want to ask you guys, is he reaching by comparing, saying that at some point Oscar could be Barrera and Eric Morales? I kind of find that's kind of reaching when there's no rivalry. I mean, there's got to be a rivalry there, right, to make that kind of a comparison. I don't think we're there yet, but I don't think we could ever get there if there's no Hamed, if there's no, you know, certain names to draw out the best of what this kid could potentially be.
To compare Oscar Valdez, I mean, great fighter, world champion, you know, but let me just give you an example. Eric Morales, when he became the world champion for the first time, he beat a true and tried champion a little bit past his prime.
Past his prime, right.
But a true and tried champion in Daniel Zaragoza. Okay, Oscar Valdez beat an Argentinian nobody's even heard about. And if you've seen the fight, the guy couldn't even throw a right hand. So that's where we're at right now with Oscar Valdez. Still a lot of potential. Still can become a great name for Mexico and for boxing and for Top Rank. But to compare him against Eric Morales, with Eric Morales and Barrera, I think it's Bob Arum being Bob Arum.
Yeah. I have to agree with you, man, 100% on that one. I don't agree with you the whole Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. thing, but go ahead, Kenny. I mean, Lenny.
Bob Arum's got a case of the Max Kellerman disease, just loving to compare guys, modern guys, to old legendary guys. I agree with Felipe, though. Oscar Valdez is already 25. He's not super young. He hasn't reached that next level yet. I think he's maybe reached star status, but not, definitely not superstar and definitely not elite status currently in the sport amongst guys that is unweight. But I mean, could he be great? Yeah, I mean, maybe. Probably be a step better than he is now, but yeah, definitely not in the Eric Morales Barrera category just yet.
Well, he needs his nemesis. I mean, who out there right now would be that nemesis for him to elevate to that next level of possibly even being close to being mentioned with the names of Barrera and Morales, guys? I can't think of a name. He would have to move up in weight, right?
Yeah, I mean, he would have to, I mean, at 20 and 126, I mean, there is, I mean, no, I mean, who would he fight at 126 that makes a name? I mean, the other champions there are Carl Frampton. Is Carl Frampton the guy? I mean, he could be. I mean, Carl Frampton is a great champion, undefeated. He beats Leo Santa Cruz. He builds up his name. He faces Oscar Valdez in a unification fight. The fight's close. They have a rematch. It's a great fight, you know. It can happen. He can make a name, but to compare him, I mean, but then at that point, I think he's becoming Oscar Valdez. But to compare him against Eric Morales, it just doesn't make sense to me.
The problem with the dance partner for Oscar Valdez is that the guys at 126. I mean, he's got none with top rank that are available.
Exactly.
Gary Russell, Frampton, Cuellar, Abner Mares, Leo Santa Cruz. They're all with Heyman. He's not gonna make those fights with top ranks rising star featherweight?
Well, there wouldn't be enough money yet either, you know? Because he hasn't held the stage solo yet. So it's interesting to see where they're going to go with his career. I mean, this guy could possibly end up, you know, having a solid career, a dominant career, but you know, kind of leave his prime behind because there was nobody there to fill in the void. I think that's the scary part for the guy. You know what I mean? We lose Felipe?
No.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Are you thinking?
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
No, there's no question. What I'm saying is that the scary part for Oscar is that to get to that next level, to be elevated to that level, is that there is no dance partner there for him, you know, and everybody else is at another promotional group. So it's a strong possibility that this guy's going to keep winning, but his prime is going to be left behind because there's nobody there to capitalize it. You know what I mean? To really show what he's all about. So Espinoza,
well, I mean,
Top Rank, they got some work to do.
No, but the
only
options. Go ahead.
The only options he has at Top Rank are at 130, and I don't know if he can carry 130. He looks pretty comfortable at 126. I mean, he's got Lomachenko sitting there at 130. He's got Walter sitting there at 130. He's got a bunch of Golden Boy guys at 130. But I mean, he's got that's a big jump for a 25-year-old.
But I think also that if we can expect for things to work out, Top Rank has stated that they are willing to work with Al Heyman. So if they do, I mean, that's a mega fight. You know, Carl Frampton beats Leo Santa Cruz for the second time in January. The fight fans are going to start asking for Oscar Valdez. And Oscar Valdez looks good on November 5th. The fight fans are going to start asking for that fight. And if Top Rank and Al Heyman can get together, they can make that fight in 2017. You know, and I think that's a blockbuster fight. And it's a fight that can put Oscar Valdez on the map, you know,
I think they
as
make
a bigger
that,
name.
That
as a bigger
move,
name,
though. I think if anything, if the move is to make a fight happen with PBC, I think Abner Mars' name will be mentioned first. Don't you think? That's if he's successful in his fight coming up.
Yeah, Oscar Valdez. Yeah, but then that you also have to work with Al Heyman to make that fight. So, then that's another thing. Does beating Abner Mars really elevate your name to the extent that
no,
Eric
no,
Morales
but it does
is?
Lead. It would show that there is potential of it leading to him facing, you know, the winner of Leo Santa Cruz and Carl Frampton. You know what I mean? I think
True.
That would be the secure thing for Al Heyman to do is to see, okay, do you want to do business Because at the same time, I think that the leverage is going to be that the winner between Santa Cruz and Frampton is a lot heavier and more known than Oscar Valdez. That would be part of the leverage of negotiation for Al Heyman. Would Bob Arum budge and be the B-side for that?
But then it makes more sense, being that if Abner Mattis beats Jesus Cuellar, is that Abner Mattis becomes the interim WBA featherweight champion, with the champion
right.
being Carl Frampton. So if Carl Frampton defeats Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Mattis defeats Jesus Cuellar, then it makes more sense to put Frampton against
Frampton,
Abner
right.
Mattis, because
yeah.
they're both under Al Heyman. So it's a much easier to make. The winner of that, the winner of that can take on.
Are you there, Felipe? You just broke up really bad. Could take on who? Oscar? I think that's what he was going to say, Manny.
Yeah, I mean, I think the my concern with trying to cross party lines between Top Rank and Al Heyman is at that weight class, Al Heyman doesn't need Bob Arum at all. He's got like six of the top eight guys at the weight class. He can, if he wants to match top guys against top guys, he's going to pull them from his own stable. He's not going to go to Bob Arum and say, hey, why don't you send me over your best guy who could possibly beat one of my guys and let's make a deal. I mean, I just don't see it happening.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, Top Rank and Espinoza management have work to do, because in order to make him a major player, well, they gotta kind of maneuver him in, because like I said, when it comes to the sport, right, the negotiating, it's not really the ring where you're going to get the major punches. It's that negotiating table, you know? And that's the more telling of what's going to happen, how the fight can be potentially made. So that's why I'm wondering, is this kid's best part of his career, is he going to be left outside looking in? And if not, what are they doing to get him in that door to be a major player? Because I think the only option is if that Top Rank, if they cannot make an agreement with PBC and Al Heyman, is he does have to move up to 130. Felipe, we got you back. He's coming right back. He said that electricity went out over there. You never know what happens in the tunnels of Mexico. So he'll come right back here. Well, Manny Pacquiao and Jesse Vargas.
It blocks off the cell phone reception.
Manny Pacquiao and Jesse Vargas are back in the news. They're going to be fighting in November. Real quick rundown about that one, and I think we'll be ending the show here really shortly. I'm going to ask you, Lenny, who do you got, man? Who are you picking and why?
I think Manny Pacquiao is going to beat him. He's a much but just better fighter. He looked really good against Tim Bradley. Vargas showed power in his last fight, which we hadn't really seen before. And if he can land something big like that against Manny Pacquiao, maybe he does some damage. But maybe Manny's just the better fighter. I'm not super excited about the fight, but I think Manny wins. What about you?
You know, it's not like a big interesting fight. It's not one of those fights that you're going to sit there and you're going to dissect it. I could already play it in my head. The thing with Vargas is that, you know, he's got success over guys with hand speed, but it's been the majority of the reason why is because the hand speed is the only thing that's moving, but the feet are always staying in one spot. When he fought Saddam Ali, he doesn't have the greatest footwork in the world, but also he's kind of, his chin has always been very questionable. Same thing with Timothy Bradley. Bradley could sometimes be stuck in the mud and be a little too stubborn and for his own good, right? Where Manny's going to show different angles, and I think that's where we're going to find out, you know, how good Jesse Vargas is. You know, I know his trainer Dewey's been saying that, you know, he's stronger. They've worked on the power. So the right hand is going to be the money getter, right? But timing is what is the one thing that they should have been worried about the most. You know, power later. You know, to me that's like after. To me, it's where your feet are going to be set, how you're going to stop the speed and the in and out movement of Manny Pacquiao. What did they work with on that one? You know, Did they learn how to cut the rings off? Did they figure out that there's a certain jab that you can do to set Manny, you know, to stay at one spot the way that Juanma Marquez did, you know, and even at some points what Timothy Bradley did or what, you know, what Floyd Mayweather did, you know. Jesse's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's a very sturdy guy. And there's things there that he could use to slow down Manny, but I'm not sure if they worked on any of that. If they solely worked on power, of getting him strong, and then, you know, hopefully just hoping to catch Manny while he comes in and thinking that he's been – that he's old overnight, it's going to be a long night for Jesse Vargas. Felipe, we get you back?
I think the key with Manny Pacquiao, too, is being able to handle the angles that he comes in at. Because, like you said, his footwork is so good, and that affects the angles that he comes in when he's throwing punches. And, I mean, I don't know if – I thought Dewey Cooper, the trainer, did a really good job with Jesse Kid Ali fight. But, yeah, like you said, Kid Ali's a different type – much different type of fighter than Manny Pacquiao. I don't know if a guy with a majority kickboxing background is going to be able to kind of – put in the nuances in the training to be able to handle the different angles that Manny comes at and the speed, both the foot speed and the hand speed combined that Manny Pacquiao is going to give him. I mean, I don't know if Manny Pacquiao really has the knockout power anymore that he used to have. So I don't know if he's going to knock out Vargas. I just think he's going to outscore him.
You know, here's the thing is that if you remember when Timothy Bradley had Teddy Atlas, The focus of talk was Teddy Atlas and how good he made Timothy Bradley look against Brandon Rios. Okay? Now it's Dewey Cooper of how good he made Jesse Vargas look against Saddam Ali. To me, it seems like the focus is not against what the opponent that they faced, you know, or the fighter themselves of the mistakes that they bring to the table, but more or less what the trainer has done, right? And I to me, again, it just goes back that, you know, it's good to give the credit to the trainer and the certain little small things that they did, but those small things worked for that particular fighter. It's not necessarily going to work with a guy with speed and still does. I mean, I'll agree with you, Lenny. He doesn't carry that same power anymore, but he does carry that razor sharp speed that does get him out of situations, you know. And the thing with even with Marquez, and it could be questionable about, you know, who he was working with, but the one thing I've always said about Marquez is that he was really intelligent. He knew when to set his feet. He knew how to counter, and he knew Manny just that much more than anybody else. I think you could say that Marquez knows Manny as almost as well as his wife knows Manny, because they've spent so much time together. Vargas is going to have to, you know, catch up to speed. And hopefully have more than just the right hand and power to bring to the table. But I kind of see I think it might be a TKO in my opinion. I think Manny may be able to get that TKO stoppage. Not a knockout stoppage, but a TKO stoppage over Jesse Vargas. Felipe, you there, brother?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that. We had like a little rolling blackout, like a second, but by the time everything turns back on, you know, took me 5 minutes or whatever.
So we were talking about Manny Pacquiao and Jesse Vargas, bro. What's your pick really quick? What do you got? What do you think?
I think Manny Pacquiao, obviously, I don't think he knocks him out. You know, Manny Pacquiao hasn't knocked anybody out in years. And Jesse Vargas has proven to have a chin, you know. So, you know, I don't think he knocks him out, but I think his speed, his agility, his movement is going to be too much for Jesse Vargas. Jesse Vargas has never really faced a guy like Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, his best fight has been against Timothy Bradley, a guy that stood in front of him and you know, fought. And Manny Pacquiao doesn't do that. You know, Manny Pacquiao darts in and darts out, you know, uses lateral movement, uses his legs, uses his speed to fight. And, you know, I don't think that Jesse Vargas is going to be able to handle all that. So I think it's going to be a wide unanimous decision, you know, maybe a couple of rounds to Jesse Vargas.
And Manny has always looked good against guys that are slow. And I don't know what you guys think, but I don't think Jesse's that fast of a guy. He's not that fast, man, you know. And, I mean, his right hand has gotten out of – sticky situations, but it's against the opponents that were questionable. And Timothy Bradley, you know, Ali, these guys had questionable chins. So I could almost see Manny having his way and having his fun, and then everybody's going to go excited again and say, oh, Manny's back. Manny's back again. You know what I mean? And it's going to be like, we're not looking at the opponent. We're just looking at the one side of the fence. But, yeah, I agree with you guys, man. So, anyways, man, hey, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks, guys, for coming on here on Leaving the Ring. We'll be back next week on our regular day, which will be Wednesday at 6 p.m. Don't forget, every Monday you got the next round. Every Tuesday you got Square Circle. And every other Thursday you got the two-minute round. Guys, once again, man, have a good night.
Hey,
and
real
enjoy
quick,
the fight
David,
this weekend. Go
real
for
quick,
it.
David, the next two-minute round, the Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world with David Avila and former fighter Elena Baby Doll Reed will be November 3rd. But tomorrow on Friday, David will be releasing on the Leave It in the Ring Network a special interview that I did with an up-and-coming fighter by the name of Raquel Miller. Very interesting. She's up-and-coming. She was in the 2012 Olympics. So look for it. It's a really good interview, I think. I wouldn't have released it if it wasn't. So David should be putting that out tomorrow on the show, on the network. So hopefully you guys get to listen to it. I think you guys will learn something about female boxing and where it's at right now.
There you go. All right, guys. You guys all have a good night.
Peace.
Good night.